Welcome to A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. As we continue to study from the book of Romans, the system and the plan by which God has determined to save man, Paul introduces the subject of circumcision. And I read to you from verses 25 through 29. And before I read that, I would remind you that circumcision was a sign of the covenant that God had made with Abraham. You may recall that God called Abraham from the Ur of Chaldees to go to a land that he would show him. He made various and sundry promises to Abraham. Through his seed, all the families of the earth would be blessed. And he gave a sign of that covenant, and that was circumcision. That circumcision showed that the people of Abraham were those with whom God had made a covenant. Now notice verse 25 through 29. For circumcision verily profiteth, if thou keep the law. But if thou be a breaker of the law, thy circumcision is made uncircumcision. What's Paul saying here? Well, circumcision denoted that they were of the special chosen people of Abraham, to be sure, but still they were obligated to obey the law that God had given unto them. Otherwise, they'd just as soon not been circumcised. He goes further and says, therefore, if the uncircumcision, that's the Gentile, keep the righteousness of the law, shall not his uncircumcision be counted for circumcision? Well, what's he saying here? Well, just as the Jew who had been circumcised, if he didn't keep the law, just as soon not had been circumcised, he was not a chosen child of God, but the Gentile, for whom circumcision was never a covenant, if he kept the law, why, he would be just as well off as the one that was circumcised. Paul continues in verse 27, and shall not uncircumcision, which is by nature, if it fulfill the law, judge thee, who by the letter and circumcision doth transgress the law? For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is an outward in the flesh. Who is a Jew? That's what Paul is going to answer. Who are the special ones of God? But he is a Jew which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God. Now Paul uses the term circumcision to refer to the chosen Jewish people, and he uses the phrase uncircumcision to refer to the Gentile people. And he notes that being a Jew was of profit, if the Jew kept the law under which he lived. But he had just as soon not have been a Jew and not have been circumcised if he was going to live like a sinful Gentile. On the other hand, if the Gentile kept the law under which he lived, he was just as well off before God as was the Jew. Now, this sign of a relationship between God and the Jews, that was circumcision, but they were to keep the law. Each one, Jew and Gentile, was to keep the law to which he was accountable. He stood in a position, the Gentile did, to judge and condemn the Jew, rather than the Jew condemning the Gentile if they did not keep the law. Well, in all of this, Paul is discussing the situation of the Jew and Gentile, but that was before the gospel had come. This was before the Christian age had begun. Now notice, the Jewish people had misunderstood their special relationship to God. So Paul is going to answer the question, all right, who is a real Jew? And he uses the term Jew here not to refer to the descendant of Abraham. He uses the term Jew here to denote the person who is in the right relationship with God. Now, the descendants of Abraham had been that way, But now, circumcision was of no significance, not in Christianity. Jew is one who is in the right relationship with God. A person who is not right with God simply because he's obeyed the act of circumcision. The letter. Since the law of circumcision has nothing to do with Christianity, and Paul makes that plain in Galatians chapter 5 and 6, there must be an inward relationship with God. That's what Paul is talking about in this system of salvation. There is to be, he says, a circumcision of the heart and spirit. Well, what does this involve? Well, the circumcision of the heart, and it's further discussed in the book of Colossians, it was a cutting away of sins that was accomplished by the forgiveness of sins. It was an operation of God. It was a circumcision of the heart made without hands. God did the cutting away of sins by forgiving sins. And when was that accomplished? Galatians chapter 2 says it was when they were baptized, when they were buried with him in baptism. Now, baptism is not the circumcision, but the circumcision, the cutting away of the sins of the heart of man, it was accomplished when baptism took place. Now, when it was commanded of the Jew, he had to still obey what the law of God told him to obey. Circumcision, as we remind you, was unimportant to the Gentile because the Gentile was never commanded to be circumcised. However, it was important for the Gentile to live according to the law that God had given the Gentile people, which was probably like the patriarchal system that existed separate and apart from the Mosaic law. You see, the principle that Paul is establishing here, obedience to God, that's an inseparable matter with a converted heart. Now, the Jews were special in the sense that they were chosen to serve. It was through them and the promises to Abraham that the promised Messiah would come, and that Messiah would be a benefit to all nations. There existed all down through the ages a certain equality, however, with the Jew and the Gentile in the mind of God. Namely, they both had to obey the truth that was given to them. It seems to me, dear friend, that in these first two chapters of Romans, we have produced a level of thinking regarding Jew and Gentile that the Jew and Gentile both needed to learn. They both needed to understand they had a mission. There was a relationship to God that they needed to have. The Jew was not superior as they thought they were. The Gentile was not inferior as they had been led to believe. The Gentile needed to learn this lesson as well as the Jew. They both need to learn. As he emphasizes in these first two chapters, all have sinned. There's the need of the system of salvation. All need salvation. Now, of course, everyone is accountable to God through the gospel now, and this is the power of God unto salvation that we are to believe and obey. And then we turn our attention now to chapter 3. And to my mind, this is one of the more difficult chapters of the book. Paul raises the question, having shown that circumcision in and of and by itself did not necessarily mean that they were the acceptable relationship with God now. He said, what advantage then hath the Jew? Or what profit is there of circumcision? Was there really any benefit for these people to be circumcised? Paul says, much in every way. And the first thing that he mentions is because that unto them were committed the oracles of God. We raise the question, what advantage did the Jew have? What profit was it to him to be a Jew? It seems like Paul has taken away all of that advantage. But he says no, the prophet was much in every way. The term prophet was, of course, not what the Jews had thought it was, but nonetheless there was a prophet because they could make certain contributions to the good of every man. Their prophet was in the prophet of serving. It was not one of superiority. They were used by God to accomplish something beneficial to the whole human family. And God had committed to them his oracles, his word, his promises, his prophecies, and these are found in the inspired writings of the Old Testament. And these writings served a very unique purpose in God's plan for redeeming man. Indeed, the Jews were a fortunate people, because through them this plan was to be made known, and through them this plan was to become a reality. We read in the sermon that Stephen preached in Acts chapter 7 how he mentioned the Jews had received the law by the disposition of angels. It had come from God. The trouble with the Jew was simply this. They had not kept it. Nonetheless, God used the Jew to fulfill his intent to save all mankind, and that, of course, by and through Christ. And this was found to their advantage and to their profit. Well, did that relationship with God really mean anything? Because they, as a nation, rejected Christ. Paul said, "For what if some did not believe? Shall their unbelief make the faith of God without effect? God forbid. Let God be true and every man a liar, as it is written, that thou mightest be justified in thy sayings and mightest overcome when thou art judged." Paul is going to show that the Jews did have an advantage, but though they disbelieved, that did not change God's plan. That did not change what God had promised. That did not change how God was going to use them. Oh, yes, the Jews had not kept the law, and they didn't receive Christ when Christ came. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But are we to think because some of the Jews, even most of the Jews, rejected Christ, that this rejection nullified God's plan and nullified God's intent to save mankind? Paul says, "God forbid," which literally means, "May it not be so." No, God would be faithful to his promises. He would not fail to do what the prophets had foretold was going to take place. In fact, the authority of God is asserted forcefully here. Paul says, "Let God be true and every man a liar." Paul is contending for the authority of God above that of man. And indeed, God is to have his way. When man disbelieves God, friend, he is in serious water. Man could never become more out of place than could challenge God's word. Yet disbelief is a challenge and is a judgment of the very veracity of God. God has overcome those who would dare stand in judgment of him and who would dare disbelieve his word. We'll resume our study with verse 5 and 6 in chapter 3 in our next program. Remember to fear God and keep his commandments. This is A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.